Fan Run Radio podcasters, many of you have been asking for a way to support the station if you live out of state and can't support our sponsors, and now there's a way. Just go to shopfanrun.com and buy a shirt, or two, or ten, and know that you're supporting the station that does our best to support you. Shopfanrun.com.
Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is 3 and Out with Nate Hodges, Houston Kress, and Davey Hudson. Many imitators, no duplicators. Fan Run Radio.
My vision for 3 and Out is we want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless
radio show
that
everybody
in the SEC wants to
listen to.
That's my goal. These guys realize that we want to change the culture. They're hungry. These guys are ready to get started, and I'm excited about it. All right. Your expectations, all right, aren't near what mine are.
All right. 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 All right.
Our program has the history, the facilities, the tradition, and the resources to play with anyone, anytime, and that's what we're going to do again.
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your plans behind. Because your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no plans of mine. Say, we can go where we want to. Place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world. Leave the real one far behind. We can dance.
Welcome into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. It is a Football Friday edition of 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville. I'm Nate Hodges, alongside Houston Kress and Davey Hudson. Got you covered as we head into the weekend here on Rocky Top. The final home game for Tennessee football this season. It is senior day for the Vols. Well, they don't have that many. Probably makes it a good thing for the seniors, though. You get a little more, you know, a little more TV time.
I'd say the TV time is probably the exact same.
I always hated special days. Senior day, homecoming.
Why do you hate the seniors?
It just gets in the way. Like, just play the game. I don't know.
Damn.
No, I mean, like, coaching. Like, not the players don't care.
You should have said that.
Sorry. You just want to focus on the game. I'm sure that's what Jeremy Pruitt is. He strikes me as a guy that probably doesn't like the any type of wrinkles in the schedule, so to speak, leading up to the football game. It is a 3:30 kickoff tomorrow on CBS. A lot of people feel like that, you know, you're cursing that time slot or with that broadcast crew. I don't think so. I think it's good. It's going to be not necessarily warm tomorrow.
I thought you were about to say warm, and I was like, 60, though. Better than it has been all week.
Yeah.
By about 20 degrees.
It's about 30 right now. High 57. Bright sunshine at Neyland Stadium. Missouri, I've got as a 6-point line here. I know it's 5.5 some places. I wondered if it would move more with the – I mean, we talked about it midweek. Tight ends out. It was a corner out, linebacker too. Was that the three main players that were out for the Missouri Tigers? I mean, I know they have Drew Locke, and I know everything kind of has always gone around that offense, but it's pretty big news that the Tennessee defense doesn't have to focus on the tight end, who's been one of their difference makers, and Tennessee defense has played really well.
Are you
the last
surprised
2 weeks.
The line didn't move at all once the news of Obukumum came out? And, I mean,
pretty
all three
actually.
Of them, but I think especially him, right?
I guess, I mean, maybe is it just because the line was already less than a touchdown? You know, if it was like 7.5, 8, I mean, you know, in a different world, like I'm sure it would have gotten below that number. But it's like, you know, 5.5, I don't know, 6 to 5.5 is a big deal. 6 to 5, that's a pretty big deal. That's one of those more likely margin outcomes.
In case you missed it, it's Albert Oquigabunum? Oquibunum?
Spell it for the listeners.
Okay. That's the first two letters.
Okay.
W-U-E-G.
Oquig-G-B.
Oquig-B.
Maybe the G sound.
U-N-A-M.
We should have the telling B.
Oquibunum.
Oquibunum.
Oquibunum, maybe the G sound. Oquibunum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wide receiver Nate Brown.
Nate Brown.
And cornerback Adam Sparks.
Adam Sparks and Nate Brown. Much
Adam
better,
Sparks.
Much easier.
I appreciate
radio
the
names.
Short names
yeah.
there later. Out this weekend. He apparently, Barry Odom did report that tight end Messiah Swinson,
okay.
who is coming off of a torn ACL, he may play in a bowl game, but he's still out for this game.
Oh. Any tight ends left?
I'd imagine there's somebody there. Yeah.
Probably.
But yeah, big news. Huge.
All right.
I guess. I'm just surprised that didn't move the line, though. I mean, he's one of their top receivers. He is the leading pass catcher. He's not the top in yards. I think he's second or third in yards. But he is a big play tight end. I mean, he's got chunk plays over, you know, 40 and 50 yards on the year. He's been a very, very important part to this offense. He's the guy that Drew Lock has went to on third down and got a habits. And now he is going to be out this weekend. I think I mentioned earlier this week that he did get a little bit banged up last week.
You did?
I did not know he would be out, but indeed he is out. So we talked about who's a tight end that Tennessee's had to really focus on. We couldn't really think of one. And now the one that we were worried the most about, not playing. So there's that.
I still don't have a good feel for how this game's gonna go. I mean, with Kentucky, I think we all knew it was going to be lower scoring. We all knew that, you know, they were going to try and run the football. And I think despite the fact that Tennessee, you know, put a whooping on them, which no one really predicted. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Davey, who was super confident, picked Tennessee by 1 point.
21-20, I believe.
It's close to one team score. But I don't – like, Missouri's played such weird football this year. I mean, they look like they were on their way to a road win at South Carolina. The bottom drops out, and then things
of the sky.
Yeah.
Is that what
it
you meant?
It started raining. Cats and dogs.
Well, the bottom dropped out of their game plan and the sky because
the
it wasn't even rain. It was just solid water. They were underneath a solid sheet of water. Real quick, by the way, Adam Sparks, the cornerback who will be missing, is the team's third leading tackler in only 8 games played. He's the only person on Missouri's team in the top 20 in total tackles that has not played in all 10 games. He's played in 8. 38 tackles, leads the secondary. He has one interception, one quarterback hurry on the year. So there's that.
Well, I haven't watched a lot of Missouri tape, but that means one of two things. Either he gets picked on a lot and ends up making the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a combination of he takes the other team's best receiver and gets picked on a lot, so he's making a lot of tackles. Or he comes up and run support a lot. Any of which are good news for Tennessee. Because if they're let's say worst case scenario, he's a bad player already, gets picked on, and that's why he's pushing guys out of bounds a lot who have already caught the football.
Sure.
That means the guy behind him's even worse.
It's generally the way it works.
Throw at that guy all game long.
I knew he was a decent tackler. I knew he was the leading tackler in the secondary. I did not realize he'd be third on the team.
That's weird for a corner. I mean, you see that with safeties a lot, but corner?
Yeah. And I'm with you. I don't know really what that means. I don't know, you know, Barry Odom's defensive philosophy. I don't know what he's doing with the corners. Number 24, Terez Hall, is second in tackles. He's a linebacker. And then Cale Garrett, also a linebacker, is number one. He has 86 total tackles. He's probably a guy you need to look out for. Cale Garrett cleans up. Terez Hall, he's a little bit of a sack master. He's got 4 on the year. Nothing crazy. But he's the guy that they blitz a little bit. And then Adam Sparks, the corner, 3rd in total tackles, out for this game as well. How about that? It's a bad secondary, too. We broke this down. They're
yeah.
like 118th in the country against the pass. They're a lot better against the run, around 30th. This is going to be a game where the Garantano lovers and the Garantano haters are going to have a lot of evidence probably at the end of it, one way or the other, in my opinion. It
yeah, man.
Seems as if Tennessee will have to be successful passing the football and protecting the quarterback in order to win this game and keep up with Missouri, who I do think will score some points. The question is, can they find anything in the ground game to help, you know, slow down the pass rush, to help Garantano? Because this has not been a team that likes to throw the ball, you know, 30, 40 times a game. They like to keep Garantano in that 20 to 25 range if they can. I don't know if this is a game you're going to be able to get away with that. Missouri really, really good against the run. That's why they were able to go down to Gainesville and beat Florida, because they were like, if you're going to beat us, it's going to be Franks. Franks can't do that. It's why they were able to beat or to be in the game against Kentucky and should have won it, because Kentucky, we know, can't throw the football. And against Missouri, they couldn't really run it. But Terry Wilson does put together a nice drive there at the end of the game with a little help from the refs. Throws the touchdown as time expires, or maybe with no time on the clock. It's just an untimed down. Can Tennessee do anything on the ground? And then obviously, can Garantano have enough time? And can receivers get open, make plays? Because that's where there are plays to be made against this Missouri team. You need to throw the football. It's pretty simple. If you can throw it at all, you should be able to hang some points and hopefully keep up with them. And can the defense match their performance or maybe even play better than they did last week against Kentucky? Did you see the freshman rankings for corners across the country?
I did.
Pro Football Focus graded all freshman corners across the country. Your top five, starting at number five, Jerron Morris, Texas State, with a grade of 74.1. Number four, Alante Taylor, Tennessee, of course.
Wow.
With a grade of 74.2. Number three, Patrick Surtain the second, of course, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
75.7. Number two, Julius Brents of Iowa, grading at a 77.6. And the number one ranked freshman corner in the country, Bryce Thompson, Tennessee, with an 81.8. Pruitt said this week he will be back this weekend to face off against Missouri. Feeling pretty good at corner for the next couple years, I'd say, with Alante Taylor, Bryce Thompson, and the recruits that are coming in. Hopefully this kind of data doesn't scare off the Warren Burrells, Tyus Fields, and Kenyatta Watsons of the world. Because credit to J.C. Horn. He came in sixth from South Carolina. Longtime Tennessee commit. You lost him when the coaching search began. Man, could you imagine if they'd gotten all three of those? I guess if you had kept Horn, you probably don't get Thompson. Perhaps, right? I mean, I know he left South Carolina, but if Horn's here, he's probably not coming here. Potentially.
Probably not, yeah. He might have gone somewhere else, yeah.
But you've got two of the top four freshman corners in the country. Now, granted, there are probably a lot of really good corners who are freshmen who aren't playing this year or aren't playing as much. It was a minimum of 125 defensive snaps on the season. That said, let's do it. If Tennessee can develop a consistent pass rush over the next couple of years, I'm feeling pretty good about the defense as a whole. When's the last time you had two corners that you were like, whew, yeah, these guys? It's been a long bleeping time.
I can't remember.
Somebody asked me last night, what's like the one position group that has been star-deprived at Tennessee for the longest? It's hard to make an argument for anything other than corner, really. I mean, you haven't had good to great. Cam Sutton was like one, but before that, for a long time, there wasn't really one. Jonathan Wade, maybe. Like Jabari. I mean, you got to go way back to get into, you know, really, really, really good corners. Mm-hmm. And even then, none of those guys were national sensations the way already Bryce Thompson and Alante Taylor are. Now, I guess you could argue that Cam Sutton became one. I could also argue that Cam Sutton kind of got worse in his time here. His freshman and sophomore years were probably his best two.
Yeah.
He was asked to do a lot more, and teams didn't throw to him, you know, as a junior. But he also got beat a little bit from time to time. Also battled a few injuries, so it's not entirely his fault. But right now, Tennessee with Thompson and Taylor, two different styles, I think. I think when you look at the way they play, like Bryce is, he's probably more physical. He's obviously smaller, more of a ball-hawking corner, a guy who can disrupt the football, intercept the football. Alante Taylor's just, he's systematic, right? I mean, he's locked down, great technique. Most of the time when people throw at him, the guy's so covered it doesn't matter. But he's, not, I guess, not the most dynamic playmaking corner. And maybe that's just because people don't throw his way because he's so good. And they've thrown towards Bryce, who's obviously made a ton of plays this year. But wow, two corners as freshmen in the top four as freshmen. And I would imagine they're both in the top 15 nationally with grades based on what you've seen. I mean, they've graded Bryce as one SEC player of the week, I think twice maybe. Alante Taylor doesn't get as much credit because, again, teams just don't throw at him. At one point, Alante Taylor was allowing the fewest yards per pass towards his receiver in the country. Not just among freshmen, but in the country. Right. I think he's dropped to second or third in the recent weeks. But I think that's just because people are realizing throwing just at Bryce is not really a good idea. They'll be put to the test this weekend, though.
Yeah, I was looking at the schedule. I mean, I feel like this is the, I mean, this will be the best passing offense they face since Alabama. I think Missouri, you know.
Well, Alante Taylor didn't play against Alabama, really. He slapped a guy in the face and got sent to the locker room.
It's true. He's fresh.
That probably helped his yards per.
Not a couple times.
That probably helped his numbers a little
He's
bit.
He's fresh and ready to go.
What was the other game he missed?
Charlotte.
Was it Charlotte?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Because then we were like, yeah, it's fine.
See, that would have helped. So Kentucky. It all kind of evened out. He wouldn't have allowed much against Charlotte. Tennessee wasn't really tested defensively against Charlotte, but Alante Taylor would have, you know, helped the numbers. So we'll call that a wash.
Yeah, I mean, I think Missouri will be one of the best passing offenses you've faced all year. I mean, I think West Virginia and Alabama, maybe the only two you kind of throw up there with them.
I'd say those two are pretty good.
So this will be a test for the secondary, but they are getting healthier.
Yep.
You mentioned Thompson back, Flowers back.
Osborne was back last week, played really, really well. You've gotten, in my opinion, some good snaps from Todd Kelly. Nigel Warrior, not nearly the sore spot in the secondary that he was at the beginning of the year. That seems like a guy who's bought in and is playing much better. I'd like to think the criticism on this show probably helped,
this is the main
you know, motivate the
it
coaching
probably
staff.
Probably wasn't any of the coaching that he received.
No. Well, I mean, they hear it too. And they're like, you know what? These guys are right. He needs to pick it up a little bit. Why didn't he try to tackle that guy? What's going on here?
What's he doing with David Sills?
You know, and I mean, I'm not trying to take credit. I'm just saying we recognized the problem and diagnosed it very, very quickly. And that problem has since been, I don't want to say fixed, but it's getting better. Not as much of a problem. We were pretty hard on him for a while. First couple games. It was pretty.
Well, to be fair, I mean, people expect that's more out of him than
that's
some of
when
the other players.
Well.
And that's.
It's weird. They didn't even really expect more out of him. They just had in their mind that he was more than he was and had been more than he. I mean, let's not forget, someone who does a show at the same time we do has someone on that show that said he should have been a first-team All-American and first-team All-SEC in the preseason and said that him being left off the list was a shame. Again, I say, based on what? He hadn't done anything to this point except be named Nigel Warrior and be Dale Carter's son. This year, I think you've seen probably a lot of the reasons he wasn't on those preseason lists. He shied away from contact. He made a lot of mistakes, mental errors, tackling technique, frankly, wasn't good. He was a guy getting drugged down the field a few times because he was a little nervous to get in there. Over the second half of the season, however, that's a guy who's really stepped up and improved, I think. I mean, he had a big hit on a third down against Kentucky. It was a form tackle. He wrapped up. He drove the hips through the receiver, put him on the ground. A third and eight, I think it got him 4 or 5 yards because of a short tackle from Nigel Warrior. That's what you need your safeties to do. And he's done that for the most part in the back half of the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jeremy Pruitt had high expectations for him just the way he talked about him before the season and as it kind of went through and how they handle the different responsibilities in the secondary, which is obviously a huge part of Jeremy Pruitt's defense, and it's going to be tested this weekend, tomorrow.
Him getting this coaching staff will probably be the greatest thing that ever happened to a guy like Nigel Warrior.
That's a good point.
That's a guy who came in here with obviously a lot of fanfare, a lot of hype, high recruiting rankings. You saw, you know, he's fast. He's athletic. But, I mean, I remember the first play he got in against South Carolina in Columbia in 2016, bites on the double move because he's trying to make the play, gives up a touchdown. I think that was ultimately the touchdown that got you beat. It's a guy who needed to be taught a little bit of discipline, some technique, needs to understand different coverages and things that go along with playing in, you know, at a high level in an SEC secondary. Obviously, this is a staff that can teach him those things, and I think that's why you've seen him get better as the year has gone on, and obviously next year he will be, I think, even better. That said, he will have a lot of competition once the freshmen get here, because I don't think Jeremy Pruitt has anybody's position just penciled in for next year if they return. Going to be a lot of competition, which is going to be great for this roster.
Yeah, I don't think he does that with anyone. I was thinking about this coaching staff, what Jeremy Pruitt said about them kind of coming together through the season and working through some of those challenges, and I think I've maybe pinpointed a change on Tennessee's offensive side that's a very, very good thing and should lead to some good things tomorrow, especially when you consider the style and the rankings and the strengths and weaknesses of the Missouri defense. We'll get into that next, talking Tennessee offense on the flip side. Three and Out is driven by Toyota Knoxville, I-40, the Lovell Road exit right there on Parkside Drive, and the Black Friday specials start early and run through December 2nd. So get out there. As we mentioned this week, they've got 2018 Toyota Tundras with great deals up to $3,000 off there. And on any vehicle, new or pre-owned, any maker model, you can get an additional $300 off if you mention 3 and Out and or Fox Sports Knoxville. So tell them you heard about them right here on 3 and Out. It's Toyota Knoxville, Knoxville's Toyota dealer. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. They've been completely remodeled by Tri-Phase Construction, and we really appreciate the work Tri-Phase did here, making this place video-friendly, and we appreciate you guys watching on Periscope. If you need any commercial construction needs, they can handle it at Tri-Phase Construction, locally owned and operated right here in Knoxville. Quality, service, and innovation. It's Tri-Phase Construction. Call them 865-607-0015. That's 607-0015. Commercial build-outs, projects from scratch, remodels like we did here, they've got you covered at Tri-Phase Construction. So, Houston, I mentioned the offense. We kind of talked a little defense, the corners grading out. I mean, to have two of the top four freshman corners in the country is pretty amazing, especially considering you got one after signing day, and you know, you've got a team that's right on the verge of bowl eligibility right now, and has a great shot to go 7-5 if you can get the win tomorrow. But as we look at the offense, and Pruitt made those comments this week in the media session about the staff kind of having to fill each other out, and kind of, it's really a coaching staff having to gel. Really is the way I kind of, a lot of people say that about, you know, basketball teams a lot, but it's true. You know, all of these guys have their own takes on the best way to do certain things, and you have to take those priorities and then stack them with who's in charge, right? If Jeremy Pruitt, as the head man, wants something done a certain way, it's just got to be done that way. It doesn't matter if somebody else likes it a different way or not. And then as it goes down the pecking order, those things, you know, then there's things Jeremy Pruitt probably doesn't care to have his thumb on in terms of offense, and he allows Tyson Helton to then handle all of those things, and then it goes down to position coaches after that. I thought back, I was wondering about how the game plan on offense has looked different ever since the South Carolina game. How it seemed like they came out against Kentucky, and we talked about that Kentucky is plays a lot more what I would call help defense over the top, right? A lot more safeties going to be helping. Their secondary have been really limiting other teams. They have been able to stop the run without having to commit a lot of numbers into the box. And so we wondered if Tennessee was going to have a similar game plan to the one they had against South Carolina, where they threw a lot of short stuff. But they immediately came out and threw the football, I think, with more variation than we've seen in any other football game this season against Kentucky. And I think it all changed on the road at Auburn. If you remember at Auburn, they ran the football seemingly every single first down and a lot on second down. And they got in third and long, and they asked Jarrett Garantano to, at that point, you know, when it's third and seven, the situation almost allowed Tyson Helton to be like, we got to call a pass here, coach, third and seven, sorry. You know, it was like run, third and seven, got to call a pass. They dialed up a bunch of passing plays on third down. Their efficiency was incredible. Garantano hits the big plays. He correctly identified where the single coverage was for most of that game. The receivers made plays. And I think that's when something changed with this offensive game planning, where they said, you know what, and maybe it was Pruitt, maybe it was Tyson Helton figuring out how to scheme the right type of passing plays early in games, but something changed on the road at Auburn where somebody said, you know, it's okay if we throw the ball a little more on early downs. It just is. If we can complete passes on the road at Auburn on third and seven, surely on first and 10, we can throw a 5-yard route and put us in, you know, second and three, and that would be a good thing. Because if, you know, the Alabama game's Alabama, but they came out against South Carolina and threw the ball first and then ran it, and they did the same thing against Kentucky. Now, I don't know what the hell happened against Charlotte. I don't know that we'll ever know. That might just be a young team with a first-year coaching staff kind of just saying, all right, here's Charlotte.
They prepped for Kentucky all week. That's why they look so good.
Here's Charlotte. We're going to work on our base stuff. Nobody really got excited about doing that, and they just kind of slept walk through that one. But South Carolina and Kentucky, both games, they had kind of a more detailed plan, I think, or specific plan for South Carolina, where it was like, this is where we want to attack. They came out against Kentucky, and the variation, we finally got to see, I think, the multiple offense that I'd been looking for this season. But something changed at that Auburn game, I think. I don't know if it was trust in Garantano that he would be able to read the defense correctly and get the ball to the right spot, even in tough down and distance. But they threw to run on the road at South Carolina. And really, if the offense puts together one more touchdown drive, despite the fact that the defense didn't show up that night, you're still going to win. If you get some ref calls go your way, you still would have won. If the defense plays just a tad better, you still would have won. That game just kind of sucked. Kentucky, all those things happened, and it wasn't
everything close. Came together, yeah. It's amazing they could stop Benny Snell in Kentucky, and they couldn't tackle Rico Dowdle. The inability to stop South Carolina after that final drive in the second quarter will baffle me all offseason.
I wonder.
It frustrates
me. A big part of that, I think, was South Carolina off the bye week, and Pruitt even said a lot of the looks they gave them they hadn't seen before.
Yeah,
so
makes sense.
I wonder if it's just
really, when you think about it, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but when you tie everything into that South Carolina game and realize that Tennessee was coming off the Alabama game, South Carolina coming off their second bye week of the season, and they were at home at night. They got Wanham back. Like, everything kind of rolled together for South Carolina that night, and it was still just a field goal game.
You still were right there.
You still want to win that one. You're not letting anybody off the hook for the, you know, defensive performance. But if all things are equal, I think Tennessee probably wins that game. Unfortunately, and this is just the nature of it, sometimes the schedule kind of goes against you. The bye weeks kind of go against you. That's probably why Tennessee was able to keep it close against Alabama in 2015. You caught Alabama on their eighth straight game, and you had come off a bye. You had some stuff that they hadn't seen before. You were able to keep that one close and damn near win it. You know, credit to Muschamp and that staff for putting some stuff together offensively that gave this defense some trouble. That said, man, if South Carolina had to make up the game they missed during their scheduled bye week, that's probably a much different outcome, and Tennessee's probably sitting right now at, you know, six wins. It's unfortunate.
The reason throwing the ball early is so important against the Missouri defense is because they're so good against the run and they're so weak against the pass. And if they were weak against the pass coming into the game, and now their top leading tackling cornerback is out also, you know, I guess I'm optimistic that Tennessee will be able to come out and mix things up and throw the football early and get, hopefully, I mean, hopefully that was part of the reason Tennessee was always starting slow too, at least on offense, was they were just trying to run the ball into a brick wall with an offensive line that just isn't going to push anybody around.
This week, passing early is a good thing.
Like, you just have to do it, right?
And that's where Missouri is the weakest. That's what you need to do. You need to pass to set up the run in this game, much like you did in other games that you were successful.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran the ball well last week against a Kentucky defense that's been pretty stingy against the run. Maybe they are getting better. Maybe we can expect the running game to be, you know, at least serviceable again this week. That said, your big plays against Missouri will come in the passing game. They're weak in the secondary. Their pass rush is not what it has been in recent years. If Tennessee receivers can do what they've done all year and you know, go above defenders, get open, catch balls in traffic, and Garantano can have some time to throw, Tennessee should be able to move the ball and score some points in the passing game. You said something during the break. I teased it on Periscope. That's why I'm going to make you talk about it now.
Okay.
I checked the recap.
Uh-huh.
It was not mentioned in there about the halftime adjustment questions that Jeremy Pruitt was asked on Vol Calls. I think it was Vol Calls. Was it Vol Calls? Is that what you said?
That's what I read.
Okay. I don't know. It wasn't in the recap. But Jeremy Pruitt was asked about halftime adjustments. And the reason I find this interesting, a few years ago, Butch Jones was asked about halftime adjustments, and I believe the exact quote was, halftime adjustments are overrated.
Mm.
Is that what he said? It was something along the lines of, anyway.
It seemed par for the course.
I'll try to find the exact quote. Nate, tell our listeners what Jeremy Pruitt said about halftime adjustments this week.
Well, for the Tennessee defense, apparently they print off and put on the board every single play the other team has run in the first half. Show the formation.
Every play.
Show the play, and then identify what to look for in the second half from those formations. We talked about the South Carolina game. South Carolina went tempo and showed them formations that they hadn't seen them run before. And when you're going tempo, you can't even sub to try and match, the formations that they are running. Not to mention, with tempo, it's harder to get the right play call in that could match specific personnel groupings as they go from formation to formation. It makes sense, right? We talk about it all the time. The college halftimes are
long.
Long.
You've got time.
Like, really, really long.
I'm sure no coach thinks they're long enough, but they're longer than the NFL by a lot.
And obviously, you can be putting together all of those sheets, you know, as the half goes, right? I mean, the support staff, we always talk about with Alabama, right? They got this huge support staff. Like, that's not something a coach has to do. You can have somebody just printing formations as the half goes and have them ready. And even you could even have them diagramming the play. It makes perfect sense. A lot of times a team comes out with a new look, a new set, a new formation for a specific game. They have some base plays they run off of it early. Then they come back in the second half and will fake those base plays and run their counter to it. So at halftime, it makes sense to say, all right, this is a new formation. We didn't go over this. This is what they did out of it. This is why it's dangerous. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt's a defensive encyclopedia, I'm sure. I'm sure he's seen, and especially when you coach high school, then into college, you've probably seen all kind of weird formations and know kind of where the leverage is in each formation. Hey, this is why they go unbalanced over here, because they can run to the strength, or they can try and make us have our numbers here and get a one-on-one block over here and spring a big run this way. You know, it makes sense that you would go over what the other team's doing, but then also say, now, what teams usually do after they hit you this way, they ran the ball to the strong side four straight plays here, you know, and burn us, and we want to adjust. We want to make sure we take this gap, but watch out, because the main play action stuff we've seen off this, you know, other team do is they're going to bootleg and waggle here, and they'll drag this receiver all the way across the board. Like, all of that stuff makes perfect sense, right? And you've got the time to do it.
No, it makes perfect sense. Like, that's what should have been happening in the previous 5 years. That's what should always happen in the college game when you've got the extra time during the half, as you do. this is a great time to say, hey, here's what's working, here's what's not. Let's try to fix some stuff and be better prepared in the second half. And I'm not surprised that Jeremy Pruitt and this staff would say, here's every play, here's all the formations, here's what they're trying to do, and here's how we can adjust to attack them. You know, you just mentioned that's one of the things South Carolina did. They started throwing new looks at Tennessee that they hadn't seen on tape. And then even in the second half, after you've adjusted for the first half, again, more looks in the second half from South Carolina that you hadn't seen before. South Carolina probably knew we're going to need some stuff to trick Jeremy Pruitt in this defense and score some points. Again, that's why I say if all things are equal, I really like this staff and the way that they've adjusted, the way that they coach these guys and change things. Obviously, there are certain teams this year, especially like West Virginia and Alabama, there's just not a lot you can do, Georgia. But I'm starting to see that when things are even talent-wise, Tennessee's getting an advantage on the coaching side.
I forgot, too. He also mentioned that they segment those formations and play calls by what they did on third down and what they're doing in the red zone. So they got in the red zone twice. How did they try to attack on that first and goal from the one? How did they try to attack us there? You know, basically, you re-prep the game plan at halftime based on the first half, which makes so much sense. I'm bringing sexy back. Final segment, hour number one of the program. It's brought to you by Knoxville Stone Interiors. Check them out, knoxstoneinteriors.com. They're locally owned and operated as well. Proud woman-owned business right here in Knoxville. And the showroom will even be open tomorrow from 9 until 2. The new Christmas commercial sounds good, Houston. I don't know if you noticed you can give the granite cutting board as a gift this Christmas. And then also, I thought the flight of craft beer holder thing sounded pretty cool, too. I got to go check
flight
that out.
Flight of craft beer holder thing.
Yeah. Like, you know.
Nailed it.
Great gift ideas at knoxstoneinteriors.com. And you can check them out at 3900 Middlebrook Pike, Knoxville's Stone Interiors.
I just got a tweet that said, I don't sound like I look. What does that mean?
I don't know.
You don't sound like you look. You know what that means?
I don't know what it means.
That means we got a new Periscope watcher. Shout out to that guy.
Yeah.
They've never seen you before?
I guess not.
All right.
Or maybe they've never heard me before.
Chalk it up. Well, either a new listener or viewer, one of the other is true.
I just don't know what that means.
I think that's good
news. I'm intrigued, and I don't know that I want to know the answer. Real quick, little housekeeping breaking news update.
All right.
24/7 Wolverines, which is, I don't think it's 24/7 related officially.
Oh, it's just
I'm trying to
24/7 a Wolverine fan.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's it's just like someone who covers, someone who, you know, fan covers Michigan football.
Oh, like if you say I'm all of all 24/7.
But a lot of those people do have some connection, so I'm not going to poo-poo the idea that this person may have some info.
Okay.
But they just tweeted this. Four-star running back Eric Gray cancels his trip to Michigan again. Expect him to flip to Tennessee any day now. There's our running back, folks.
Woo!
Eric Gray. Come on down.
You mentioned Michigan. Harrison Bailey, 2020 quarterback out of Marietta, Georgia. Teammates with Ramel Keaton, current Vol commit. But Harrison Bailey said, on Thursday, November 29th, 2018 at 2:45 p.m. in the Marietta Performing Arts Center, I will be announcing my college decision. Right now, according to the official 24/7 account, he is a 90% crystal ball to Michigan, but 10% to Tennessee. Those are the top two teams. Something to keep an eye on for the quarterback of the 2020 class.
You probably don't want to keep an eye on that if he's 90% to Michigan.
This is
also, it's 2020. We got time. We got plenty of time if he goes to Michigan.
Well, you mentioned Michigan. I was like,
no,
I got that nugget.
I'm with
throw
you.
It out
I
there.
Just, 2020. We're focused on 2019.
Eric Gray. I mean, that's one they've been after.
They need to get him. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Especially with running back clearly now a priority, which I didn't know. I wasn't sure they were going to take one. I mean, you lose London, but you've still got Jordan, Chandler, and Banks next year. I mean, I know you want more than that, but I figured you could probably go get a walk-on or something like that. But if they can add a four-star in Eric Gray, I'd be A-okay with that. He's an all-purpose back, so he's more of a Ty Chandler-type pass catcher, guy who can do a little bit of everything. Is Pruitt's style, is because I think, you know, Tyson Helton probably likes running backs who can catch the ball, who can do some things in the pass game. Mm-hmm. Hell, we saw Tim Jordan catch a few passes against Kentucky. That was a matchup that they exploited like crazy. Tim Jordan had a really nice game catching the football. Is it going to be a case where Tennessee tries to have one of those type running backs at all times and then also a battering ram type guy? Pruitt doesn't seem like the kind of guy who only wants 5'11", 200-pound running backs. Seems like the kind of guy who wants a couple that you can throw in there and just plow ahead when you need to.
Yeah, I think by putting Pruitt and Helton together, I think you're almost forced to have like both specialties, right? You got to have in a perfect world, I think you have thunder and lightning.
Yep.
You know, on this offense, the scheme they run, the formations they run, they're multiple enough to keep both of those types of backs involved. And really, the lightning back is kind of a half receiver sometimes in today's modern game of football. They can serve as the third down back type of role, but also in other sets, other formations, you can have both those guys on the field at the same time. Eric Gray is, as you mentioned, all-purpose back, 5'10", 193, and from Memphis, Tennessee.
Been committed to Michigan for a long time, hadn't he?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but people have been saying that he's just not going to end up in Michigan. It was one of those things where people just seemed to know that he wasn't going to end up there. I saw something midweek this week that, you know, Tennessee fans were like, oh, man, Eric Gray is finally going to go to Michigan. This is bad. So, obviously, now the inverse news.
Canceled it.
If he's canceled his trip. And this recruiting always cracks me up because the first reply to that Michigan Nation 24/7 tweet is from another Michigan fan. And his response is, yeah, because they are relevant. It's like, buddy, you're losing a four-star running back. I don't care if you lose him to the Sisters of the Poor. Like, losing a four-star running back, not good. I don't care if he decides he doesn't want to play football anymore. Like, why does it matter where he's going? Sugarcoat it however you want to, yeah, there, Michigan,
That actually makes it worse, champ.
Right.
If you're losing four-star running backs to, quote, irrelevant programs, that's not a very good sign. It is strange to me that 24/7 has basically nothing on Tennessee in Eric Gray's crystal ball. It's 88% Michigan, 12% Ole Miss. He does not, and that's 16 predictions, but he does not have a single one to Tennessee, and you know, Michigan people are thinking he's due to flip any time, and that is not a new story. I mean, people have been thinking Eric Gray is Tennessee's best chance, and that if they want him, they could flip him. That's been out there for quite some time, and it seems like people officially in the know haven't really made a prediction of it. By the way, early enrollee and early signee is Eric Gray, so he would be here to go through spring ball.
That would be huge. We'll come back. We'll kick off hour number two. What would a win mean over Missouri, and how does that stack you up in the SEC? It's not just this year, but moving forward. I definitely want to hit on that as we prep you for a huge football weekend. It's a Football Friday edition of 3 and Out.